Welcome, Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And let me introduce the crew. Guys, if you don't mind waiting for the video portion of our show, he's back. Chief Joel Schultz, also Dr. Joel Schultz. I get confused with all the titles, but thank you for being back on the show. Also, Chief Chris Noller, all the way from Colorado. So thank you guys so much. And hey, we missed you. I know you guys are busy, and I think that we missed both of you guys last week, if I'm not mistaken. The days kind of run together for me too, but I'm glad we have you guys on here. We got some great topics to talk about. A shout out to our sponsors, you know, our title sponsors, GullsAtGulls.com, Compliant Technologies. They're our satellite sponsor. Thanks to them, we're in our sixth week of satellite radio. Very exciting stuff. GunLearn.com, BlueTheGull.com, MyMedicare.live, and Safeguard Recruiting, our streaming sponsor. And thanks to them, we're reaching about 1.5 million people right now on stream. TwoBells.com, they built a new online store at LeoRoundtable.com. A shout out to Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com. Thanks for carrying our content. Also, Ray Dietrich, former lawman.com and lawofficer.com. Thanks to all those entities for helping make this show happen. And now, what in the world are we talking about today? Here is the stories in the coffer, guys. FBI, if local agencies will not prosecute violence, the DOJ will. They're specifically talking about the anti-ICE protests going on right now in Los Angeles with the threat of it going on elsewhere around the country. And the feds are saying, you know what? If the local jurisdictions aren't going to get it done and prosecute the bad guys for screwing with the cops, we'll do it. So that's kind of nice. Also, we got Supreme Court tosses a ruling against Minneapolis police officer in the George Floyd riot case. We don't hear a lot of things like this, going on from Minneapolis. So it's going to be very interesting to cover. And then our next one, we've got some stories with video components. We got a video shows a Chicago police officer fatally shooting a man during a gun battle. And it was a gun battle following a chase after the vehicle rolls over. Man, this thing goes down quick. Then we got NYPD officer fatally shoots a man that's armed with a knife inside of an apartment. So it's kind of close quarters. Then let's jump over to Nashville. Nashville police officer fatally shoots a guy after he charges at the officer with a gun. And then we got officials released body cam footage of a fatal 2024 officer-involved shooting of a guy named Marquez Crowder, and we'll be talking about that as time permits. So, yeah, we got some good stuff coming up. So if you guys are ready, let's go in and get this party started. Our main story, they have a tendency to be a little bit deeper, lawofficer.com, and again, FBI, if local agencies won't prosecute violence, the DOJ will. So we're in L.A. on this one, Los Angeles. The FBI has identified a suspect that starts talking about in the incident that happened earlier in the weekend. It's during the anti-ICE protest that's going on in L.A. right now. A federal officer was allegedly assaulted. Attorney General Pam Bondi announced the update during an appearance on Fox News that happened Monday evening. Now, authorities have previously posted a $50,000 reward. They're trying to find this bad guy that was throwing rocks at federal vehicles. And one of them reportedly hit and injured a federal officer. And over the weekend, our AG, she's awesome, Pam Bondi, confirmed that investigators had secured this bad guy's identity. Bondi went on to say that those who participate in violence or destructive actions during the protests, that they will be held accountable. And she said the DOJ would pursue charges under the Hobbs Act. It covers robbery, extortion, attacks on federal personnel. And penalties are severe, including up to 20 years in prison for looting, if you guys can believe that. That's impressive. And up to 5 years for spitting on a federal police officer. And now Kash Patel jumps into the mix. He's the FBI director. And he said that if local authorities don't pursue criminal charges against those assaulting law enforcement, the feds will actually do it. And here's a quote saying, if you assault a law enforcement officer, you're going to go to jail, period. Now he added that enforcement would proceed without regard for the suspect's background, immigration status, or motivations. If local jurisdictions don't hold law enforcement, the FBI will step in. So there you go. I don't know if you guys were as pleased to hear that as I am, but Chief Chris Noller.
Yeah, it's about time. I mean, these kind of things have gone on for a long time over the last 4 years, where people are doing things that are clear violations of the law. Nothing is happening to them either as a result of decisions made not to make arrests, or at the the DA level to not try to move forward on those charges. And we have to have a country with law and order, and law and order doesn't exist when you can assault police officers without any recourse, when you can throw rocks through windshields of moving cars. That's going to injure people in that vehicle, even if the rock doesn't fully penetrate the windshield. I mean, there's spalling, all kinds of stuff comes off that glass. Spitting on cops, that's just not, that cannot stand. It can't. So
Sweet.
thank God somebody's going to stand up and hold people accountable.
Love it. Chief Joel Schultz.
Well, first of all, I think a few minutes ago, you referred to me and Maxine Waters in the same sentence.
But that was before the radio started.
I just want to clarify that we're not related. That I'm always worried about the federal law enforcement power expansion. So, however, I celebrate this absolutely. And the Hobbs Act that's referred to in these announcements basically assures that anything that involves interstate commerce suddenly becomes federal venue, which, you know, if you're messing with the interstate, if you're messing with federal officers, if you're messing with interstate communications, it's very broad. And that's fine. That's great for the feds to have that. I don't think under that act, if like an LAPD officer was assaulted, I'm not sure how that could be generated into a federal crime. And I'm not sure that's what was promised here. But the contrast between the way this is handled and the 2020 riots, there's a little bit of political and spiritual and democratic redemption here when people are going to be held accountable for doing something other than peaceful protests. And those claims that, you know, I think the public doesn't understand that there are so many paid agitators and so many people bust into these situations. This is not a spontaneous thing. People don't say, oh, I've got a Molotov cocktail in the closet. I'll just snag it up and we'll go down to the riot. These things are often very, very clearly orchestrated with trained people. They know how to assault. They know how to make improvised weapons. It's not a spontaneous outburst of patriotism by any means.
What I think would be nice to see is the federal government do some kind of investigation to figure out who's paying for this. Because Chief Schultz is exactly right. These are not just homegrown people decide to go out and throw, rocks through cops' cars or, you know, Molotov cocktails or burn down three cars in the middle of the street. These are people that are purposely brought into a community to disrupt it and to create violence and agitation and get everybody else stirred up. And the people that are funding this, the people that are supporting this, training these people, should be in federal prison.
You know, I saw that they actually found an organization that was funding this. They got almost all of their funding from the state of California, which was kind of scary. But with it moving outside the jurisdiction of the state of California, you know, that would be a good question, because there's definitely going to be deeper pockets than the state of California that make it go elsewhere. I am curious though, gentlemen, let's just say that you're a appellate judge or a lower court judge, and you get overruled by a court that's higher than you, and they either remand the case back down to you, or they just, you know, totally come up with a different decision. You get egg on your face. You know, you kind of get spanked publicly. That's a little bit embarrassing. Most judges, unless you're in the Ninth Circuit and you're just like overly used to it, most judges don't like that. What about with mayors and governors? And, you know, Newsom, you know, it's just amazing when his lips are moving. I have to assume that he's lying, because he, you know, like Maxine Waters saying, you know, there, I've been there. I was on the street. There's absolutely no violence. And, you know, we're not stupid. We can watch a video. Then you've got other people saying, well, look at the timestamps. These are old videos. They're like a day or two old. Well, it started back on Friday, I believe, you know, of last week. But, you know, with the president of the United States sending in the National Guard against the governor's wishes, and we all know from what we're seeing that if that wasn't done, it would be just, you know, the city would likely, a large part of it would burn down, and there would be a lot more, murder, mayhem, you know, deaths, you know, serious injuries. So do these people just not mind getting spanked publicly because the feds have to send in the arsenal in order to fix things? Do they just not care? How do you think that process works upstairs?
I don't think they care. I mean, they're the same people that are telling you these are peaceful protests with three cars burning in the background. I mean, there's nothing peaceful about that, whether you own the cars or just the scene that it sets for everybody else who's there. And it's the same kind of thing. We don't need the National Guard. Well, you need something. And at some point, I think the president has to step in to protect his employees, the federal agents who are the ones that are being, in this case, maligned. You know, I think whether LAPD, I don't know enough about the details to say whether LAPD could have dealt with that. I mean, they're a large, well-trained department, but it seemed to me like a little bit of help would have been needed. Certainly, if that was going on in my jurisdiction, I would want some help. You know, even at a smaller level. I mean, clearly, we're not as big as LA is, but you know, if it's getting that crazy where stores are burning, cars are burning, people are looting stores and stuff like that, we would need help to deal with it. I think they're just willfully ignorant.
That's a good catchphrase, actually. I like that.
I think you know, and here in Colorado, Chief Miller, you'd be you know, having to do a balancing act to not appear to be in support of ICE, and I know you'd stand on principle and take the risk, but we've got some very California-like anti-immigration enforcement statutes where you could really face some financial and professional peril for making references to ICE. And I don't know where those lines are, but if I've got another cop and I don't care what badge they're wearing or what patches on their sleeve, I'm going to go help.
Well, absolutely. What I'll tell you is, in my jurisdiction, if somebody's assaulting ICE agents, we're going to go there as quickly as we can to help them. And there's nothing in state law that would prevent me from doing that. So, yeah, I agree with you 100%. You got to protect one another.
All right, gentlemen, perfect timing. It's time for our first commercial break. Don't go anywhere, guys. It's about to get really good. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about our title sponsor, Gauls at Gauls.com. And you know, as police officers, we all know that we can buy our gear from a lot of different sources. And when you consider going online, it's almost unlimited, right? But I want to remind everybody about the importance of supporting the companies that actually support law enforcement. I don't know of a company that does that better or fits that bill better than Gauls at Gauls.com. Even their motto is proud to serve those who serve, which of course they do in spectacular fashion. And they walk the talk by supporting dozens of focused organizations like this radio show. So when you're looking for gear, please support our title sponsor by going to Gauls at Gauls.com. And listen to this, for the loyal listeners of the show, they're going to do you one better. I'm going to give you a radio code that they're giving you. It's radio15. By using that, when you go to Gauls.com, you automatically get 15% off your next purchase, and that is good until June the 30th. So radio15, type that in order to get 15% off. And hey, they've got gift cards. We give away a couple every week on the show. Go to Gauls.com, hook up your family, friends, and loved ones with a new Gauls gift card, Gauls.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. We're here with Chief Joel Schultz and Chief Chris Noller. Thanks, guys, for being on the show. We just got done talking about the LA riots and about how Pam Bondi's office and Kash Patel from the FBI are saying that, hey, if you screw with the cops and you're part of this mayhem that's going on, you're going to be held accountable. And Kash Patel said that even if the local jurisdictions don't want to prosecute the people that are screwing with the cops, the feds are going to do it. So, some interesting stuff. Are you guys ready to move on to the next story, gentlemen?
Well, I just want to make this comment for the civilians. You know, you hear about posse comitatus, and that just means that the feds can't enforce local law, and it's a cap on federal power. But when you've got an insurrection, when you've got federal assets at risk, then, you know, I'm sure the president will prevail in his claim that this was appropriate. And the second thing is, as I said in our previous conversation before we went live, there was an old scientific theory that if you put flour and corn in the corner of a barn, then it would spontaneously cause rats to appear. Not like rats would come out of it. And the theory that if you put a National Guard troop or a cop in riot gear on a street corner, that a riot will happen is the same kind of insanity. It's all responsive. It's not, you know, it's not causative. And I just think the public needs to know that.
So I'm, you know, and that brings a catchphrase to mind. Chief Noller, was that intentional ignorance? What was that? Willful ignorance?
Willful
what was
that? Ignorance. Yes, sir.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. I just thought the light bulb just went up when you said that, Chief Schultz. So, wow. All right. I may have to steal that, but I'll try to give you credit the first couple times I use it, Chief Noller. But yeah. All right, guys, look, moving along. We've got another one here. It's interesting from Minneapolis. LawOfficer.com is the source. Supreme Court tosses a ruling against a Minneapolis police officer in the George Floyd riot case. So listen to this. The Minnesota Police and Peace Officers Association, they declared victory after the U.S. Supreme Court. Now, this is not the Minnesota State Supreme Court. This is the U.S. Supreme Court. They vacated a lower court ruling against a Minneapolis police officer who used less lethal rounds during a 2020 riot. Now, the case involves Officer Benjamin Bauer. He was part of a team of officers. They were evacuating a young woman who had been stabbed during the riots after the death of George Floyd. Now, according to the union or the association, Officer Bauer helped from a perimeter or he helped form a perimeter around the woman who had been stabbed. He was defending her from the aggressive mob. Now, when an individual attempted to break through the perimeter, including by shoving a fellow police officer and grabbing his baton, this officer, Bauer, he used less lethal rounds to repel the bad guy, defend his fellow officers, and ensure that this young woman who'd been stabbed could escape the mob to receive medical treatment. Now, it's just mind-boggling that somebody couldn't grasp that. So the individual later sued Bauer, alleging excessive force. Now, the lawsuit survived dismissal in both district court and at the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeal, and that it was affirmed 2-1 in a 2-1 decision, and they ruled that Bauer was not entitled to qualified immunity. Just crazy. The city of Minneapolis asked the association, and again, that is the Minnesota Police and Peace Officers Association. So the city asked them for help. So with the case headed to the possible trial, the city of Minneapolis asked this association to intervene with the amicus brief to the Supreme Court of the United States. Now, they hired attorneys Chris Medell, Todd Hennen of the Maddle PA to file the amicus brief, urging the Supreme Court to take the case. And now, lo and behold, the legal efforts of Maddle PA appeared to have been persuasive enough for the U.S. Supreme Court. The Supreme Court sided with the argument on behalf of the association and the officer, Bauer. They sent the case back to the lower courts, and this time using a new legal standard set by the U.S. Supreme Court justices. So in that new standard, they're requiring the lower court judges to evaluate the entire context of the officer's actions, not just the immediate moment when he used force. And in Bauer's case, it means the courts must now weigh everything that happened before, leading up to the encounter, not just the moment that he fired less lethal rounds. So interesting. And it sounds like another similar ruling involving the Felix case. But Dr. Schultz, love to hear your input on this one.
Yeah, first of all, kudos to MPPOA. I had the privilege of talking to them a couple of years ago, and my goodness, they've had a lot of things to work on in their fair state lately. When I looked up this case, I could not believe the facts of the case were not so clear on its face. The officer was rescuing a dying woman who'd been stabbed in a riot condition. And let's just for the civilian public, qualified immunity is a judge-made federal law that most state courts have accepted. Some states have by statute rejected it. It's not a get-out-of-jail-free card. It's conditional. And it's not a defense in a suit. It's actually a defense to a suit. So that's one of the first things that would be claimed by an officer who is the subject of a lawsuit, that you've got an officer doing something that they're required by law to do. It's a situation that is so unique that there's no clear policy or pre-existing constitutional law that the officer should know to guide their actions. And that there's a time constraint. The officer has to make a decision right now. And then they may be eligible for qualified immunity. So it's not necessarily a given, and the public kind of maybe doesn't understand that. So the other thing is that, you know, the recent case we talked about a couple of weeks ago where the Supreme Court was moving away from the moment of decision in deadly force cases and looked at the context, and everybody was worried that that was going to be a bad thing and a prelude to officer created jeopardy. But it really, in a couple of cases like this one, has really worked in our favor. They're going to be looking at the whole context of the situation. So good outcome in this case, and good work for the advocates.
Yeah. Chris Noller and Chief, we have about 15 seconds.
I agree with what Chief Schultz says. I think it's good. The officers are facing these in high, rapid changing situations and trying to make decisions, and there's got to be some grace there.
Excellent. Good commentary, gentlemen. It's time for a second commercial break. Stick with us, guys. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com, and they're committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low-ethics manner, utilizing their, and remember this thing, CD3. It stands for Conductive Distraction and De-escalation Technology. Now, their flagship product, we all know, it's called the Glove. It's amazing. It's helped officers tens of thousands of times with no injuries. And yes, you heard that correctly. I said no injuries. The Glove has actually achieved non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. And when it comes to weapons retention, transitioning to a sidearm or conducted energy weapon, the Glove at ComplianTechnologies.com, they virtually have eliminated weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Compliant Technologies and the revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already turned to nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most common sense, hands-on solutions that's ever come along. So go to ComplianTechnologies.com today and tell them that Chip sent you. Again, that is ComplianTechnologies.com. Now it's time to talk about Blue the Gold at BlueTheGold.com. If you're struggling with the ins and outs of warrantless searches and seizures, or if you're worried about the liability in case you get it wrong, say hello to BlueTheGold.com. They translate search and seizure doctrines into clear, straightforward concepts that any officer can relate to. Plus, they give the training for free thanks to BlueTheGold.com's free weekly webinars. Now, actually coming up today, Reasonable Suspicion Deep Dive. You can sign up at BlueTheGold.com today and join thousands of your peers in blue and step up your legal game, because frankly, you and your agency cannot afford not to. BlueTheGold.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. We're joined here. My name is Chip the Block, your host, but we're joined here by Chief Chris Noller and Chief Joel Schultz. And I think that Chief Noller is up next. We were talking about a Minneapolis police officer that is saving the life of a woman that's been stabbed during a George Floyd riot, and he's trying to protect her and his fellow officers, and it's a riot situation, and they've got a perimeter. They're trying to protect the officers inside, and the woman specifically trying to get her medical attention. And then we got some Yahoo trying to bust through. And you know what? There are a lot of locations where they would have gone lethal and not used less lethal on that. I think that there's a strong argument. I mean, obviously you'd have to be the officer and you'd have to be in fear of the right things at the right time, but it would have been very easy. I could see for that have been justified lethal use of lethal force. That bad guy's lucky that it was just less lethal. But this cop, they were taking away his qualified immunity, and that just got reversed at the U.S. Supreme Court level. And Chief Noller, you're up next.
I don't understand what people think is going to happen to them when we're trying to help somebody in the middle of a riot situation and they approach officers while they're trying to deal. They're probably trying to render aid, immediate aid, in case she's, got massive blood loss, apply tourniquets, and then get her moved out of there. But when you start attacking the group, and I have to admit, I don't know the facts of how that went down. But just based on what I read, I don't know what you expect to have happen. I mean, you're just not allowed to do those kinds of things. And the sooner people start realizing that, the less we're going to have to use force in those kind of situations. Some things you just are not allowed to do. And attack cops while they're trying to render aid to somebody that was stabbed in a riot is one of those things you're just not allowed to do.
Now, we were talking about the Ninth Circuit earlier. I believe this was the Eighth Circuit. And again, getting publicly spanked because the U.S. Supreme Court has to step in and fix this mess. I wonder if anybody's listening.
I don't think they care. I think that they have an agenda, and it is an agenda that is anti law enforcement, anti criminal justice. And they make decisions. Some of these judges make decisions based on that agenda, and they could care less what happens in the higher courts.
Hey, do you think they work for YouTube and Facebook?
I don't know.
Come on, Chief Schultz. That was good. Come on.
Yeah, I'll give you credit for that. That almost erases the Maxine Waters comment. People are posturing for maybe not the judges, but the politicians you were talking about, like in California, they're posturing for the 2028, and everybody's on the super left bandwagon. As I've said on this program before, I want a vigorous, healthy, rational Democratic Party to be part of the two-party system, and that it is just not happening.
I just don't think they've read the memo that the people in these communities are getting tired of this, and not just in my community or in communities like mine, but communities around the country are getting tired of this lawless behavior and lack of accountability. It's the cool thing about law enforcement is it's really not rocket science. If people face consequences, there's less people that commit those crimes. If people don't face consequences, then more people are emboldened to commit crime. Or at least the same individual is emboldened to commit crime after crime after crime after crime. People going to jail is a way to reduce crime. It's not the only thing that's going to reduce crime, but my job isn't to figure out how to make somebody's socioeconomic situation change. I'm not the socioeconomic enforcer. I'm the law enforcer. And I am paid to do a job. My officers that work for me are paid to do a job, and that is to enforce the laws of the state of Colorado and the municipality where we live. And until those laws change, that's what we do. And if people want to address the other issues that do lead to crime, that's somebody needs to step up and address those issues, because it's not our job to do it. And that's where we have lost. We have lost all common sense, in my opinion, and expect officers to be the ones that do all this stuff.
You know, I find it ironic that we spent, since at least the mid early 90s, with an emphasis on community policing. You didn't get a chief job unless you were going to do community policing. And I'm an advocate of whatever that is. I always thought I did community policing. I didn't know it had to have a label. It was just policing. And I actually did my doctoral dissertation on training for community policing. So we did all that. We got funding for it. And you're probably like me, Chief. If I need guns, cars, radios, and staff, during the Reagan era it was for drugs. During the Clinton era, it was for community policing. During the Bush era, it was for terrorism. We all still need the same thing. But after 30 years of trying to get immersed in community policing and patting people on the head and cleaning up litter in the parks, we end up with some of the most anti-police historic era in our country's history. So that doesn't mean that we need to get back to the 50s, attitude adjustment in the alleys kind of policing at all. But consequences have consequences.
Right. I think the reason I could be full of hot air, but I think one of the reasons why we find ourselves in the situation that we are is because we don't know how to say no when people throw stuff at us to go do this, that, or the other thing, mental health, all this other stuff. We don't know how to say no, because who else is anybody going to call? We have zero mental health. We have zero drug treatments that's any effect, has any effect, at least in my community. I'll speak for where I'm at. And we're left holding the bag all the time. Well, the problem is that's not what we're trained to do. We're not trained to be your mental health guy, all that kind of stuff. I mean, what we're trained to do is enforce the law. I agree with you. We can't go back to the 50s where we're doing things that are inappropriate. But if we got back to what our core mission is, which is to enforce the law with respect and with a good ethical and moral character, I think we would have a different view of a lot of these other people. What happens is we promise them the world and we can't deliver. Or we've given the impression that we've promised the world and then we can't deliver. And they get frustrated when we end up having to shoot a guy in mental duress because nobody took care of him for the 10 years prior to that and got him mental health treatment. That's not our fault. And my officers are not anybody's punching bag. They're not anybody's target stand. They're not out there to be beat down and get hurt when we have means to protect ourselves. If people want that mentally ill person to not be shot by an officer given certain circumstances, then let's get him mental health treatment. But that's not our job. We don't have the funding for that. We don't have the training and the education for that, nor do we have the time for that, because I've got 48 other calls holding. I don't have 4 hours to spend with a guy to talk him off a ledge.
Well, thank you, Chief. We got 3 minutes left. I'm going to try to get through this last story with a video component real quick here. Rumble.com. This is Butter, our favorite law enforcement video channel. Video shows Chicago police officer fatally shooting a guy in a gun battle after a car chase and a rollover.
in your fucking head! Come in your head! Fuck you!
Dave Blake on 04, he was last seen going down Brainerd.
433, 10-4, 10-1, shots fired! Let me see your hat! Let me see...
433, 10-1, 433, shots fired, Brainerd in the...
He's still shooting, still up! Hold it fire, hold it fire!
433.
We're playing.
420.
Wow, so we're in Chicago. So Chicago police, it's on May the 8th. It's 5:49 p.m. And so usually the height of the rush hour, there's a report of a person with a gun. They locate the suspect, and he's also wanted in connection with an aggravated battery case. So we got body cam. It was released on Tuesday. Shows officers doing a traffic stop on this bad guy. It's in a place called Hedwich. And they're trying to get the suspect to exit a car. And he doesn't comply. They break the driver's window, and the guy takes off. So now it's a chase. And he ends up crashing the car, and it rolls over. So the cops both get out with guns, and they're running up on the car. And this guy crawls out the window. He's got a gun of his own. He starts firing shots at the cops. So they start beating feet away. The cop on the right side going backwards, he falls down. And then the cop on the left side by a light pole goes down. This bad guy is he's actually advancing the cops with his gun, with his pistol, and he's firing. And I mean, it's almost like, you know, he's got like some kind of military training, because, you know, it was impressive for the bad guy to see him do that. The cop at the light pole that went down was using the light pole for partial cover. I mean, they're up close and personal. Shots are being fired. I don't know how none of the cops were hit. It wasn't even clear the bad guy was hit, but he must have been. So shots go on, and there's the bad guy continues to take shots at the cops that are out of view of the dash cam. And then, of course, the cavalry comes in, and the bad guy ends up 50-year-old Joseph Navarro ends up dying, but no injuries to the cops. We got about a minute and a half, gentlemen, whoever wants to start us off on this, but it is a wild video to watch. A lot of moving parts. Chief Schultz, you want to start us off on this one?
Well, first of all, I noticed that apparently people in Chicago pull over for first responder vehicles. I thought that was pretty remarkable at the beginning of the video. We might want to talk when we come back and have time about the value of suppressive fire.
This is it. Actually, you know what? You're right. We got one more commercial break coming up, don't we?
You don't have to mute me after all.
Well, at least somebody's paying attention.
So and it just illustrates how persistent some offenders are. I mean, this guy, he might've been shot statistically, maybe one out of every four of those officer shots hit him, but man, he kept fighting. He must've been a Marine. And so you can't assume that a crash is going to kill somebody or that a bullet's going to take somebody out. They keep fighting.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And this is one of those videos people may want to see. But guys, we're coming up on our next commercial break, so stick with us. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about GunLearn at GunLearn.com. And you know, as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns every day. But it's what we don't know about them that gets us in the trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and also disciplinary issues. But GunLearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending a live seminar at GunLearn.com. You can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett and also Attorney Ken Affianco. Now, the course has had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn has been a trusted source since 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies, forensic organizations, and also police departments nationwide. And hey, founder Dan O'Kelly has come up with a great opportunity for chiefs and sheriffs to have their own agency. You can host a seminar for absolutely no cost. Amazing opportunity at GunLearn.com. Again, that is GunLearn.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com. Talking about this last use of force that we had. A bad guy runs from the cops after they do punch the window out on the driver's side, trying to get him to exit. He takes off and he crashes. Apparently not a great. He's a better... not even a great shot, but he's a better at tactical operations, advancing on cops with a gun than he is at driving. He wrecks the car, rolls it over, crawls out. Cops are coming up on him with guns in their hands. And to their credit, they were separated at different angles. And I saw the one cop on the right as he's running up on the bad guy crawling out of the car. There's something in the grass in the field, and he runs around it. But when the bad guy produces the gun and starts shooting him, the cop starts going backwards, but he doesn't go around whatever he jumped over, you know, and he goes down. Both cops go down. Shootout. The cops miraculously don't get hit, even though one of them was extremely close to the bad guy. I mean, within like touching distance, and bad guy ends up getting shot and killed. So that's where we left off talking. We've got Chief Joel Schultz on the show and also Chief Chris Noller. So, gentlemen, I'll let you guys take it from here. Chief Noller.
I that was pretty startling. Honestly, you see that kind of an accident, and I'm probably with the guys. I mean, I get them running up there, but I would have been pretty surprised that a guy survived that kind of accident and came out guns a-blazing, so to speak. I thought they did a really good job considering the circumstances. Sometimes you just don't get to pick how those things go down, and they did a good job of trying to work themselves to cover and continued the fight. And given the circumstances, obviously, if you have a chance to set something up, you would want to do it a little bit differently. But, yeah, you know, it's just the way things go sometimes. And they did an incredible job, I thought.
Agreed.
There's probably some takeaways there you could do better, but.
Yeah, the backdrop they had, you know, behind the bad guy, they had a busy street. So, yeah. And there was no other angle for them to get where he was at. They had cover, they really couldn't move. And if they would have been able to move, the backdrop still would have been a busy roadway. So,
I thought they did a good job of managing their fire, with the vehicles, trying not to put the citizens in danger. At least that's what it looked like from the vantage point of the body worn camera.
Yeah, I agreed. At that point, I think the bad guy was taking more shots or giving more shots than he was receiving. But, you know, when you take those facts into consideration, that's a good explanation of why. I'm glad they did not overshoot and then create a situation where we got, you know, civilians or cars, you know, getting struck by gunfire or businesses on the other side of the road. Good coverage, gentlemen. If you guys are ready, we've got another story with a video component. And, you know, we're getting these from Rumble.com, our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter. And we try to describe in great detail what's going on because we have audio listeners that are listening by podcast and radio station. And we don't want you guys to feel like you're missing out on anything. But if we cover a video that you absolutely have to see, all you have to do is go to our Rumble channel the very next day. Our channel is Leo Roundtable, or you can type in Law Enforcement Talk Show. And that's our playlist. And the videos will show up underneath that at 9 o'clock Eastern time the very next morning. Our producer puts a copy of this video on a Rumble channel. And the copy of this live show he puts up, it's got all the videos embedded into it. Pictures of the good guys and the bad guys pop up as we're talking about them. It's really a great way to watch the show. It's not live. It's delayed, but it's the produced version of the live show, which is great. It's got all the bells and whistles. So on this one, NYPD officer fatally shoots a man armed with a knife inside an apartment.
Yeah.
Bro, come on.
Bro, who?
Listen.
How's it 148 Central? We need an additional.
You know, a lot of times in these New York City videos, we got close quarters, right? And you got more than one cop most of the time. And so it's, you know, you just got to, you know, it is what it is. We're in Brooklyn, New York. New York City police officer shot and killed a guy allegedly armed with a knife. I would say, according to the video, there's no allegedly about it, but this is in Brooklyn on Tuesday afternoon. So it happened just after 3:00 p.m. inside a NYCHA apartment building in Brownsville. So a woman calls 911, tells the dispatchers that she thinks the father of her kids is on his way to her apartment, the killer. And she said that the guy was known to carry weapons, including machetes and hammers. And she said that he was mad because another guy had been watching their children. And this is according to NYPD Chief Charles McAvoy. So we got two uniform officers. They get there. They're on the outside of the apartment talking to the woman. They're in the lobby. But when they go back with her to the apartment, our 25-year-old bad guy, he's already inside. It doesn't say how he got in there, but he's inside there with multiple children. And so within seconds of entering the apartment, this guy shows up around the corner and he's brandishing a knife from his waistband. He picks up a shirt and he goes for the knife. Now, the woman's between the two cops and the bad guy. She's not really in a great spot, especially if she thinks that this guy's out the killer, right? So one officer, well, the woman gets out of the way, and then one officer deploys a taser. Now, the officer deploying the taser, he's the closest dude to the bad guy, and the other officers got a pistol out. But again, the guy with the taser, he's like right up close and personal, bad guy. Taser's ineffective. And then the bad guy advances on him, and it's just within a few feet of both officers. So the second officer fires two shots, hits the guy in the chest. He later dies, and they haven't released an identity yet. And no one else was injured, including the cops, you know, which is good news. So going to my show notes here, I'm showing that when the female figures out a way to vamoose out of that like tight quarter, like little hallway, when she escapes, the closest cop with the taser in this narrow hallway, you know, at the 1 minute, 20 second mark, you kind of hear the taser cycle, but the bad guy's still moving towards the cop. And then just 1 second later, you hear the double tap go down, and then they show it again at 1 minute and 38 seconds in slow motion. Always beneficial. You know, when you're the officer and it's going down in real time, you know, you see a lot, your brain, the more used you are to that stuff, your brain will slow that stuff down. But when we watch it, you know, on video and stuff, there's a lot of things that we miss. So the slow motion was really a nice advantage, you know, that they included that in there for us. So gentlemen, I'm curious what you guys think. We've got about 3 minutes and 13 seconds. And Chief Noller.
Yeah, you know, I it's hard to say what's in an officer's mind, but to pull a knife or pull a taser when a guy's got a knife, especially when they're that close to you, is not really ideal. I think the only thing I could think of is maybe with the positioning of the woman, he was afraid that if he shot with a lethal, that it would endanger her. But we don't have time, and that distance, it looked to be significantly less than 5 to 10 feet initially when he came around that corner. I mean, the time for less lethal is pretty much over if he produces a knife like that, I think. But it's tight quarters. It's hard to move around, and that female was in the way the whole time. So I don't want to judge too harshly.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of wonder whether she blocked his view somewhat. I mean, from the body cam we were watching, it was pretty clear that he lifted up a shirt and went for that knife. But it was only like seconds, right, Chief Schultz?
Yeah, and I don't say this facetiously. The person that needed to be tased was the woman to get her out of the way, and I don't blame her either. It's kind of instinctive. You know how these domestic things are. It's like, oh, you know, Billy Bob, stop doing that. And I had a very similar situation that almost was it was a pressure on the trigger kind of situation. And the wife was right there. So that super complicates. And I think, you know, regarding the taser, we see this so often in these videos. And again, big taser fan, nothing against them. They're absolutely appropriate and at the right time. But knife versus taser is just not good. He may have already had it out as part of the building search policy, and the other guy's got lethal cover. I don't know about that. And, you know, I kind of think about maybe the same thing. How do you get the taser out of your hand and transition to a handgun? You know, I see this all the time too. If somebody, you know, we say, drop the gun. You're like, well, I got a $600 gun here. I'll place it down on the grass for you, but I'm not going to drop it. The same thing. If, you know, is this guy in the back of his head thinking, man, I don't want to pay $1,500 for this taser if I just drop it and go for my gun. So there are a lot of kind of instinctive things here that may be kind of counterintuitive, but are part of that, dynamic. And I don't know at what point the officer, with all the things, you know, literally millions of sensory inputs to calculate, you know, we, as you pointed out, Chip, we could see that move toward the hand, you know, the hand move toward the waistband, you know, red flag, it would have been good to catch that earlier. And I don't know. Maybe they did. Well, but happy ending.
Yeah, yeah. Another excellent show, gentlemen. So thank you guys so much, Chief Joel Schultz and Chief Chris Noller. Thank you guys so much for being on the show. You know, we're getting to the part of the show where I usually talk about the Wounded Blue, the woundedblue.org, Lieutenant Randy Sutton's 501c3 that's helping calm out in the world of hurt that are suffering from things like PTSD and other issues. I know they're not doing the Guitars for Cops special going anymore, so you might see that on your screen. I need to fix that. But I'll tell you, I support the Wounded Blue monthly. Along with the National Police Association, the NPA, and I sleep better at night knowing that these guys are doing work behind the scenes for us, helping out cops all over the country. So they're really doing some great stuff. So if you haven't checked out the Wounded Blue lately, go to thewoundedblue.org. They have a summit coming up as well. You guys are certainly going to want to be consider attending that summit and taking your spouse with you. They have some great opportunities down there. Guys, you know, thank again to our sponsors, Gauls at Gauls.com, ComplianTechnologies.com, GunLearn.com, BlueTheGold.com, MyMedicare.life, Safeguard Recruiting, and Two Bells. You got to check out our new online store at LeoRoundTable.com. We got a lot of cool gear there, guys, and the prices are low. We don't make a dime off of it, just trying to get our gear out there. So thanks, everybody, for support. We'll be back tomorrow, 12 noon Eastern.